Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. We're wrapping this month of May up on 2 unscripted and 1 controversial note. Star documents cases of inmates claiming their innocence and new evidence that could set them free on Wrong Man, launching Sunday night. Executive producer and director Joe Bollinger joins me next. The activity on the battlegrounds of Iraq and Syria gets showcased tonight on Hunting ISIS. History Channel is the place to witness this miniseries, and you'll hear executive producer Christopher Leggett and director Sebastiano Tmada later this hour. And following that conversation, you could offer your reaction to ABC's quick yanking of Roseanne earlier today. The latest details on that situation coming up. Also ahead, Netflix talks unscripted and a new scripted series starring Uma Thurman. Our classic trivia question segment and a top variety series of the 1960s is our show to know. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker and presented on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to Audible.com, proud development partner of the 2018 New York Television Festival coming your way here in New York this summer. And it's the leading provider of spoken digital entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later this half hour. Welcome to a later and longer than expected edition this Tuesday afternoon of the program All About Television. We hope on behalf of everybody at Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker that you had a fantastic Memorial Day weekend. We're delighted you're with us for the program All About the Tube. Some great guests coming your way in the next hour and change, and we invite you to be part of the program. All it takes is a call from you. So pick up the phone, raise your voice, and dial in at this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anyway, or catch us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio. And you can also use our chat room. It's SimonApple04 by name, and you'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And if you want to comment specifically on the Roseanne situation, which we're about to document in our upcoming news notes segment, wait until 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, and we're going to expand our show so you can get some time to weigh in on that subject. So if you have a Roseanne comment or a phone call, wait until 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific to get that handled. 86 degrees at the top of the hour here. Oh, by the way, if you want to connect others, you can use Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen, follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. Joe Bollinger will be live with us from here in the Big Apple, where it's 86 degrees at the top of the hour after these news notes. Roseanne Barr and the popular reboot of the classic situation comedy bearing her first name are now gone from ABC. The network pulled Roseanne off its lineup permanently hours after Barr posted Twitter comments overnight about former presidential senior advisor Valerie Jarrett. That posting, since taken down, read in part, and I quote, and I might add, everyone will caution that some of you may be disturbed by what I'm about to read. Again, this is a quote. Muslim Brotherhood and Planet of the Apes had a baby equals BJ, unquote. ABC Entertainment President Channing Dungey, in announcing the decision, called Barr's posting, and again I quote, repugnant and inconsistent with our values, unquote. Added Walt Disney Chief Executive Officer Bob Iger, there was only one thing to do here, and that was the right thing. Prior to ABC's decision, Barr apologized to Jarrett via a statement which read in part, and again I quote, I am truly sorry for making a bad joke about her politics and her looks. I should have known better. Forgive me, my joke was in bad taste, unquote. We should point out that so far, Roseanne has not made a comment specifically about her show being canceled by ABC. Series co-stars and producers also distanced themselves from Barr and her earlier tweet, and ABC has not decided what to put on in place of Roseanne this fall, with scheduled to lead off the primetime lineup on Tuesdays. If we get any further details before the end of this program, we will pass them on to you. And now a few quickies over developments at Netflix. Uma Thurman will star in Chambers, playing a heart attack survivor who explores the mysterious death of her donor. Look for more unscripted series in the months ahead, according to Chief Content Officer Ted Sarandos, who spoke at a Paley Center for Media event here in New York earlier this afternoon. Among them, West Side, about struggling artists in the Los Angeles area. And yes, he was asked about the Roseanne situation during that event. He offered no comment. And that is news notes for today. In 1956, Alfred Hitchcock presented a film that many critics have since called his most offbeat ever. I think it's one of his best ever. It's called The Wrong Man. It's the only one of his films that was actually based on fact. The story of a New York-based jazz musician played by Henry Fonda, who, because of mistaken identity, is arrested and jailed for a robbery he did not commit. It turned out that, yes, It was mistaken identity that got him in, and it was an ultimate arrest of somebody else who looked like him that eventually caused the case to be dismissed and himself freed. I personally think Tommy gave one of his most underrated performances in that movie, and Vera Miles, who plays his wife, should have gotten Best Supporting Actress nomination for that film. There also is a wonderful subdued score by the great composer Bernard Herrmann. Hitchcock did the film in documentary style, shot all over New York City, and as I said, I think it's one of his very, very best films, and the only one based on fact. I mention this because last week on this program, we had the famed civil rights attorney, Benjamin Crump, to talk about a new series coming up next week on TV1 called Evidence of Innocence, which deals with people who were jailed in many cases for decades, claiming that they were innocent, even with evidence to that position. And it turned out, ultimately, they were freed. However, Starz, starting this Sunday at 9 p.m., will be offering a documentary series called Wrong Man, dealing with people who are still incarcerated for crimes they say they did not commit and the effort to bring those cases to justice. Joining me live here in New York is the award-winning executive producer and director of that series, Joe Berlinger. Joe, thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me. Good to be here.
You're very, very welcome, Joe. How much of Hitchcock's movie was a starting point for your series?
Zero, but it's a great reference. I'm glad, you know, I'm a big Hitchcock fan, but, you know, I've done 25 years of work in the criminal justice system in my films, and so it's just been a natural extension for me. You know, I made a film in 1992 called Brother's Keeper, which was about some guys who were brought into the system who shouldn't have been because they were innocent, and ultimately they were acquitted, so that was a happy story. But the series that I did that most marked me and set me on my course of using film to help get some social justice for people within the criminal justice system was the Paradise Lost series. You know, I made three films over 20 years about the West Memphis 3 case, where three teenagers had been accused of these devil-worshipping murders of 3 8-year-olds in the backwoods of West Memphis, Arkansas. We arrived at the arrest and filmed the arrest and the town being convinced that they were guilty and filmed the murder trials and watched these guys get sentenced to, well, one guy was sentenced to death, two guys were sentenced, you know, these are teenagers, 16, 17, 18 years old. Two of the guys were sentenced to life without parole. The point of view of the film is that they were falsely convicted, and when the film came out, it made some waves, but it did not get these guys out of prison. So we continued on and made two more documentaries over the last 20 years, and finally in August of 2011, these West Memphis 3 kids who are now adults and lost 18 years of their lives were finally released from prison. And so that made me realize that there are a lot of problems in the criminal justice system, that filmmaking and documentary making can be used to shine a light on cases where, you know, in some cases, people have no other hope than to hope the media tells their story. And it's a big problem. I mean, you know, since DNA technology has been invented, which isn't too long ago, there have been over 354 people let out of prison based on DNA. Most cases don't have DNA, and so it's just a snapshot into the problem. 20 of the people exonerated by DNA were on death row. So just DNA technology alone has gotten 20 people off of death row who otherwise would have been put to death for crimes they didn't commit. And so I wanted to do a show that, you know, tried to speed things up a little bit for people so that they didn't have to wait for, three documentaries over 20 years. And so that was the birth of the show Wrong Man that we're doing for Starz, and it starts airing on June 3rd.
Why did you decide to put it on Starz?
They're doing amazing original programming. They wanted something nonfiction from me. I suggest, you know, they're just starting with their nonfiction. I pitched them this idea, and the executives were really excited about doing something that's both good television and also something that, you know, does good for people. And so I think they liked the particular concept that I pitched, which was instead of it just being a filmmaker doing an investigation, that I was going to gather the best and the brightest minds in reinvestigating cases and watch them and film them do their thing. So we assembled this great team. You know, you have Ron Cuby, who's a well-known criminal defense attorney who has specialized in civil rights and wrongful conviction cases. We have a guy named Joe Kennedy, who's an NCIS former investigator who specializes in cold cases. We put on our team a woman named Sue Ann Robinson, who was a well-known prosecutor and now is on the defense side, so she's seen both sides. And a lot of the problems with wrongful convictions have to do with how prosecutors behave, both pre and post conviction. And then we have a veteran homicide detective who specializes in interrogations. He was, on the Detroit detective force. His name is Ira Todd. So I assembled this team, and we then picked some cases that we thought. I mean, to be honest, I get letters all the time. I mean, it's depressing how many letters I get from people in prison claiming to be innocent. Now, just because somebody writes me a letter and says they're innocent, it doesn't mean I necessarily believe it. But it's amazing how many people claim to be innocent in prison. You know, some studies estimate that up to 5% of people in prison are literally innocent of what they're convicted of, which is pretty mind-boggling. Can you imagine being on death row for something you didn't do? And so we gathered this team, and then the next task was to pick the right cases. And so I went through my files of people who have written letters, and we followed up on these cases. And I decided the criteria for the show were people who were in truly hopeless situations, meaning they've been in prison. Actually, in all three cases, these people have been in prison for 2 decades or more. All of their legal options have been exhausted, meaning all of their appeals have turned out negative. In some cases, clemency was denied. And so that they really are in desperate straits, so that a television investigation would be incredibly useful for them. And so we spent a year reinvestigating these cases, tracking down clues. In some cases, you know, one case was dependent upon kind of a jailhouse snitch who recanted his testimony to our investigators. And I think people will be shocked at some of the things that contribute to wrongful conviction cases.
You're hearing Joe Bollinger. He's the award-winning filmmaker behind the new Starz miniseries Wrong Man. It debuts this Sunday night, 9:10 Eastern Pacific Time on that channel. And he joins me here in the Big Apple this half hour on a special later than normal and longer than normal local edition of Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Simon Applebaum with you live in New York, 86.3 the top of the hour. You have a question or comment for Joe? Give us a call, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04. My name is Wickham. Fly catch into our chat room. If you have a question or comment, put it in the room. That's SimonApple04 by name. You'll find our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Or give us that call. We have another Joe coming your way on our next Tomorrow Be Televised when we kick off June. It will either be also at a later than normal time period. Our normal time is 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. This one will either be at 4 p.m. Eastern or 4:30 p.m. Eastern. And among our guests, we'll have the former executive producer of Underground. Now he is the executive producer of the brand new Marvel series, Cloak and Dagger, that begins next week on Freeform. Joe Bukowski will join us live. We had him when he did Underground. He'll be back with us Friday. Again, it will either be 4 or 4:30 Eastern. That's 1:30 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. The team you put together work on all three cases simultaneously, or do you decide let's do one after the other?
That's a good question. I mean, a little of both. I mean, we started with one case, and then as we were making progress, we filled in the next, and we filled in the next. So I guess more or less simultaneously.
I mentioned that the Hitchcock film is based on Mistaken Identity, true story, where Henry Fonda's character, who was a jazz musician that played at the Stork Club, the old nightclub here in New York, was mistaken by a woman for a robber, and that's how he got into trouble. Were any of these cases dealing with mistaken identity in some way, that like this person was at the wrong place at the wrong time?
Yeah, in fact, two of the cases have to do with faulty eyewitness identification. In one case, it was just a mistake, but the police were kind of encouraging this person to make her selection a certain way. And the other instance was somebody who was interested in reward money and knowingly made a false identification. But, you know, that's the thing. When people hear about things that go on in wrongful conviction cases, sometimes people find it hard to believe. But really, eyewitness identification is one of the most faulty ways that people are convicted, or rather, it's much more unreliable than you would think. A good 40% of eyewitness identifications have later been proven to be faulty. So it's, you know, you would think, oh, that person has made an identification, it must be accurate, but it is often proven to be inaccurate. So that's why in a case you need all sorts of corroborating evidence, and a case that relies exclusively on eyewitness identification should be questionable to a prosecutor. But often that's sometimes the only thing that puts somebody away. And again, a good number of these identifications prove to be false. The other thing that people have a hard time who aren't involved in the criminal justice system, the other thing that people have a hard time wrapping their heads around is the idea that somebody would falsely confess to a crime. You know, it happens all the time that either through police pressure or somebody's been interrogated for 10, 12 hours, they become either confused or they think they can work it out later, and they just want the pressure off them, so they'll say things or sign things that in fact they will come to regret. And we see that in one of the episodes here. You know, you see very clearly this guy, Christopher Tapp, who is accused in Idaho Falls of the murder of this young woman named Angie Dodge. He clearly has nothing to do with the crime. And you see in the show, we see interrogation tapes and the progression of the evening to the point where he's, you know, he's hooked up to a lie detector test, and he's told incorrectly that he's failed the lie detector test. It confuses him. It overwhelms him. And by 16 hours into the interrogations, he's willing to say anything just to you know, get out of the pressure he's feeling. And people often think that they can work it out later and say, oh, no, that was incorrect. So there's a lot of things that happen that would surprise people that lead to a wrongful conviction.
So you just raised a red flag here, because in an era of television where we have a number of shows that deal with lie detectors and DNA tests and so on to prove, as more people would say, you are or not the father, or lie detectors that say you were telling the truth or you were deceptive, one might think or might conclude that if you have a case like what you just described, where in fact the lie detector shows very clearly you told the truth about this, why would the police or whoever did an interrogation lie or be deceptive? I mean, I don't understand why. Did you try to investigate why they did that tactic?
Well, lie detector tests are not introduced as evidence. They're not allowed into court, so they can say whatever they want in a moment of. And remember, this was 20 years ago as well. So in this case, he was told he failed the lie detector test when he didn't, and it happens more than you would like to know. Trust me.
Yeah. In each of these cases, did your team start from the same common point, or has it turned out that because of the nature of the case, that let's say you went this direction first to gather evidence, and then you went for another person a different course?
Yeah, well, each case had its own, its own set of circumstances, its own set of evidence to track down. Some of it involved the trajectory of bullets and finding eyewitnesses. Some of it involved analyzing confession tapes. Some of it involved, tracking down people who had made the identification of the alleged assailant, which was then later recanted because of our investigators. Each case had its own set of circumstances, and in each case, our experts worked with local investigators, and each of the local investigators had their own specialty. So I think the blueprint for each case differed greatly, in fact, and different geographic areas, too. You know, one case was in Winona, Mississippi, another case in Idaho Falls, and another case in Sunnyside, Washington.
So all three, is a common point, they all were in, were they all small town cases? Were any cases that were in major cities or in major suburbs, were they considered?
I think there's a huge geographic difference between the cases. Winona probably was the smallest town. Idaho Falls, you know, I would consider that a small city. But we wanted cases in different geographic parts of the country.
The program is Wrong Man, and you can find it for the first time this coming Sunday night on Starz, 9:30 Pacific Time. We have the award-winning filmmaker Joe Berlinger with us, and if you have never seen Paradise Lost, his trio of films, do. I have. They're marvelous, and they are very eye-opening about where the criminal justice system is at, both in the past and currently. And Joe joins us live here in New York this half hour on a special Tuesday edition of Tomorrow We Tell Lies. We normally come your way Mondays and Fridays, 3:30 Eastern New Pacific, simulcast on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker, and present on the iHeartRadio podcast network. If you have a question or comment for Joe, give us a ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up later in the program, we'll have our classic trivia question of the week, and our Show to Know segment will highlight one of the great 1960s variety shows that, thanks to YouTube, as of this past weekend, you can now see in their entirety, in glorious black and white and color, The Danny Kaye Show, with one of the great entertainers of all time. And that's coming up later in the program. And once again, after 16 weeks of 3:30 Pacific, we'd love to get your thoughts about the Roseanne situation. Use our phone line, use our chat room, and let's make the conversation as simple as possible, okay? No expletive language. Let's be civil about this, and love to get your comments and your thoughts in. Joe, were family members helpful in 80s cases in terms of checking out leads?
Yes, very much so. I mean, they, of course, want to see their loved ones exonerated. I think the family members on the victim side, of course, were extremely leery because they believe justice was served. And that's the challenge with these cases. You know, we come in 20 years later, and if you're, God forbid, the victim of violent crime or any crime, or your child has been killed, you know, there's never closure, so to speak, on such a terrible thing. But the healing process is predicated on people knowing that the perpetrator has been, put away, And so here filmmakers come along, and I understand why family members get upset. Because basically, if we're questioning that verdict, it questions the foundation that they've tried to move on in their lives, and I totally get that. So when family members of victims don't want to speak to us, you know, I understand, but we do try to punch through that. In one of the interesting things about one of the cases we profiled is that the mother of the victim, who for years was so vociferously defending the verdict of one of these cases, and this is the Chris Tapp case in Idaho Falls, for the murder of a young woman named Angie Dodge. The mother came to believe after about 10 years that the perpetrator was not the person in prison, and has been working tirelessly for his release, which ultimately happens in the course of our television season. I guess I'm giving something away. We actually see somebody get out of prison as a result of the reinvestigation. But that mother was extraordinary in her realization, you know, several years into incarceration, by doing her own investigation, that the wrong person was behind bars. And then with regard to the family members, I think sometimes at great risk, they have come and helped us and tried to get justice for their loved ones. That's critical for these kinds of investigations. And it's always, as much as possible, I try to get both sides of the story, and I try to get everyone to understand that, you know, the truth is important. And even if you disagree, it's important to cooperate. And sometimes people cooperate and sometimes they don't.
Compared to your experience with the Paradise Lost films, Joe, how helpful, how interested were the local authorities or state authorities in your pursuit of getting justice?
Honestly, the local authorities are not happy whenever people come along and question what they did. And, you know, in these three cases, no different. We had lots of difficulties getting access to information, to people who would speak on behalf of the conviction. And that's, you know, one of the big issues in, I think, in the criminal justice system is there's a concept in that we have called prosecutorial immunity. Basically, prosecutors are immune from being held accountable for their acts that lead to wrongful conviction. Now, I have many friends who are good prosecutors who mean well and are excellent people and care only about justice. So it's not like I'm saying every prosecutor is bad, but those friends of mine will tell me, well, look, if there was no such thing as prosecutorial immunity, if prosecutors could be held accountable for their actions in a case, nobody would ever sign up to be a prosecutor. And I understand that argument. You know, it's not a high-paying job in most municipalities. It's an elected position in many municipalities. And so if prosecutors had to worry about being held accountable for the outcome of a prosecution, should it have go awry, as many do, I understand the argument that you might not get good prosecutors to volunteer to do the job, well, not volunteer, to, you know, accept the position. On the other hand, there has to be a happy medium, because currently it takes an awful lot for a prosecutor. It's almost unheard of for a prosecutor to be held accountable. And we have seen cases where evidence has been suppressed. We have seen cases, even the simple, you know, like the Paradise Lost case was ultimately turned on DNA evidence. And the prosecutors in that case in Arkansas fought for years to not allow DNA to be tested. Now, when the cases first happened, DNA technology was very primitive. So it is natural for a defendant a decade into his sentence to want to avail himself of this new technology called DNA technology. And you would think a prosecutor would say, of course, yes, anything for the truth. If you have a claim of innocence and we made a mistake and there's DNA evidence to be tested, of course, let's test the evidence. But it's just the opposite. You will see prosecutors fight tooth and nail to keep DNA testing from happening, to keep other sorts of testing from happening. There's this, you know, concept of finality of judgment in the legal system, where, you know, at a certain point we don't keep reopening cases. But to me, if new evidence comes up, if there's an opportunity to test DNA, I think it's, you know, just a moral imperative for prosecutors to say, sure, of course, whatever we need to, you know. And if they have nothing to hide and nothing to be afraid of, and the verdict was sound, then they should welcome DNA testing to dispel any doubt. So I think authorities, you know, that's the challenge. I mean, it's one of the reasons I'm virulently against the death penalty. Not that this show is about the death penalty, but you know, there's the moral argument, should the state be allowed to kill somebody? I don't even think you need to get into that moral argument, because the bottom line is we've seen 20 people removed from death row who would have been executed otherwise. And the point is that the criminal justice system is run by human beings. Human beings make mistakes and or don't want to admit to mistakes. And so a system that would that would allow one innocent person to be killed means you can't have the death penalty, because we just see how it has been abused by people who have been wrongfully convicted.
The program is Law Man, a new Starz miniseries premiering this Sunday night, 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. Check your locals for where Starz is available in your area on cable and satellite. For more details about the program online, go to www.starz.com. Stars.com. It's www.stars.com. And if you've never seen the Alfred Hitchcock movie, The Wrong Man, see it the next time it comes on Turner Classic Movies. And for more details about that film, which I think is one of Hitchcock's best, check out TCM.com. It's www.tcm, the Turner Classic Movies.com. Joe Rollinger, thank you again for being with us. And I just I want to honor you for not only as a filmmaker, but as a human being, really, your passion and your commitment to seeing justice get served in these cases. And I hope that more and more people stand with you in that passion.
Cool. I appreciate it, man. Keep on doing what you're doing.
Will do, Joe. All the greatest. Take care.
All right. Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Joe Rollinger, award-winning filmmaker and executive producer and director of Wrong Man, stars Sunday night, 9:10 Pacific time, joining us here in New York. On the special edition of Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Sunday Night Family live from New York. More of the program coming up, at first some words from the fine folks at Audible.com. If you're a fan of Benedict Cumberbatch, and there's a lot of people who are because of his sensational, and some might think Emmy-nominated performance for Patrick Melrose on Showtime these Sunday nights of late, well, he's narrated a brand new audiobook you can get right now at Audible.com. It's called The Order of Time by Carlo Rovelli. And all it takes is to get to this website, audibletrial.com/televised, and Benedict Cumberbatch's latest audio production can be yours. Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, inspiration, with over 186,000 titles to choose from. You listen to them on any device, including whatever you are hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio or Spreaker or iHeartRadio. Just remember, sign up at audibletrial.com/televised, get one free audio book and 1 month trial of the service. Plus, great customer service from Audible's parent, Amazon.com. And don't forget, Audible.com is back again as a leading partner in development of the annual New York Television Festival coming your way here to the Gapple this July. So, for that one free audio book, 1 month trial of the service, and evidence for sure that Audible will transform the way you hear the world, go to audibletrial.com/televised. We come back, our Classic Trinity question of the week, but first, live from both New York and L.A., two of the key people behind tonight's new History Channel miniseries, Hunting ISIS. We'll be speaking with Christopher Leggett. He's the executive producer and the director of the Vecino Tomorrow. They'll both join us live after we call us after the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, one of the best radio places on the planet, internet and otherwise. More than 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your home for the TV Unplugged show. Check it out tonight at 9:10 Eastern, 6:10 Pacific. It's music and a whole lot more. TV tonight here on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, you can catch many of Blog Talk Radio shows now simulcast on Spreaker.com and 24/7. At YouTube.com. Welcome back to a special Tuesday edition of Tomorrow Be Televised, our final one for May 2018. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. If you have a question or comment for our next guest in the hour ahead, give us a ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple0Portman. And once again, at 6 o'clock, we will open the phone lines and the chat room lines for you to get your thoughts in on ABC's decision earlier today to cancel Roseanne. History Channel has a brand new miniseries premiering tonight at 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time, and it will also be premiering this coming weekend on Viceland, which will run it as well at 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. And joining us live to talk about this new series called Hunting ISIS, executive producer Christopher Leggett, live from Los Angeles, and from New York, director Sebastiano Tomada. Christopher and Sebastiano, welcome in.
Hey, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. And Christopher, I'll start with you. What have you and your crew, led by Sebastiano, get in and do this story about ISIS?
I'm sorry, say that one more time?
Yes, Christopher. What decided for you and your production team, led by Sebastiano, to do a miniseries about where ISIS is at?
Sure. So Sebastiano came to us with the idea. He had been over there for a while, and I'll let him kind of dive into his history in the area. But he came to us with just these amazing character pods of some of the people he'd run into over there, kind of that had put themselves in these extraordinary situations in this extraordinary world. And as soon as he showed us some of these characters and kind of the heart that they wore on their sleeve, I mean, our entire team here flipped, and we knew it was going to be kind of a challenging one to figure out logistically, but we're really excited for the ride.
Sebastiano, how long have you been in the thick of the fire, if you will, in Iraq, in Syria, other places in the Middle East where ISIS was ruling?
Well, specifically when ISIS been ruling since the beginning, since 2014. But in general, I've been covering conflict and war zones since 2009. So anything that's pretty much happened from 2009 to today, I've pretty much covered.
And in doing this series for History in Viceland, what kind of new perspective or what kind of new dimension did you want to bring to the situation to viewers?
Well, my main interest with this story was try to kind of bring back this story back to the U.S. It's very difficult for people to relate to what happens in the Middle East, you know, like these major news outlets and news organizations give you, you know, like quick, fast news on a daily basis, but you don't really get an idea of what's happening on the ground. And I thought that, you know, following these Western volunteers, these Western characters, ex-military and civilians, would somewhat bring the story back home and make it a little bit more approachable for, you know, us in the U.S. or, you know, other Western countries. So I thought it was a no-brainer, and, you know, we dove into it.
Yeah, there's a relatability factor when you explore these worlds with, you know, through the eyes of these people that could be your next-door neighbors that then somehow find themselves in Syria and Iraq in, you know, a crazy world.
Once both of you decided, let's take the plunge, let's do this, how much time did you spend in Iraq and Syria to document where ISIS is at?
Well, the project from start to end almost took 3 years, but actual shooting on the ground was around a year and a half, I would say 2 years. And it started by me just covering the war against ISIS, you know, by the Iraqi forces in Iraq and the YPG, Kurdish militias in Syria. And as I was covering the story, I started running into these, you know, extraordinary characters and now friends that were taking the fight to the enemy, to ISIS. And most of these guys were ex-military. They were veterans who felt like they had a lot of, you know, unfinished business over there and decided to leave everything behind and go fight. And let's not forget, there were also, like, civilians that decided to join this fight.
When you were hunting ISIS, were you going after the leaders of this movement, going after the foot soldiers, if you will, or both?
It would have been amazing to be able to, like, chase these leaders. But, no, you have to understand that ISIS, as, you know, any other terrorist organization or Al-Qaeda, you know, they're very sneaky. They're very sneaky organizations. This is more of a guerrilla warfare. You know, it's you know, sporadic attacks. You know, the enemy keeps on moving. You have to understand that these guys are continually being surveilled by drones and by, you know, the coalition in the sky. So, you know, it's a hit and miss. You really don't know what you're going towards. You know you're going towards danger. You know you're going towards an enemy, but you don't know exactly who you're going to be facing. So most of the time, these were operations. I was following these guys on operations against ISIS foot soldiers.
You have two opportunities starting tonight to see Hunting ISIS. The first one is tonight on History Channel, or History, and that's at 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. And then it's also going to be running on Sunday nights, starting this Sunday on Viceland, available on cable and satellite. And again, it will be at 10 p.m. Pacific time, starting this Sunday, June 3rd. We've got the two key people who make this mini-series happen, executive producer Christopher Leggett and director Sebastiano Tamada. And they're both joining us live from New York and Los Angeles, respectively, this half hour, exclusively on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York, 86.3 at the top of the hour. Don't forget, at the top of the hour, we will open the phone lines and chat room lines for you to weigh in on the ABC Roseanne controversy. You haven't heard? ABC yanked Roseanne from its schedule effective today because of the controversial tweet that the Roseanne Barr presented earlier today on Twitter regarding former Obama senior political advisor Valerie Jarrett, which was taken down, and Barr did apologize before ABC made their call. We'll recap the situation at the top of the hour and then open up the phone line, chat line to you. But in the meantime, if you have a question or comment for our guests right now, just ring in at 646-652-2906, 646-652-2906. Numbers good anywhere. You're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker, or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. You will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. We're back on Friday, either at 4 or 4:30 Eastern Time. It's 1 or 1:30 Pacific Time. And joining us among our guests will be the former executive producer and co-creator of Underground, now the executive producer and showrunner of the new Freeform series, Marvelous Cloak and Dagger, all premiering next week, Joe Pokoski. That's an exclusive interview with us right here, Friday, on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Christopher, what was the easiest part about doing this project and the hardest?
That's a good one. I guess the easiest, we had an abundance of riches from all the footage that Sebastiano brought back. I mean, we, in most production that we kind of do out of Delirio, we have representatives out in production field. This was one that didn't allow for that logistically. So we kind of relied entirely on him, his camera, and occasionally some stringers that we could pick up for some additional camera angles. So when we would come back, it would always be a luck of what was he able to capture and what was, you know, what was going to be in the edit and make the series, because capturing footage and war footage specifically with a single camera is kind of nerve-wracking. There's a lot of things happening all at once, and the story can kind of disappear within a second if you haven't captured the right moments. But within the edit, you know, we always had a lot of material. It was a abundant of riches for kind of, you know, the material we had. But the hardest probably was the logistical side. I mean, as one can imagine, it was incredibly difficult to both get him over there with all the production support he did need. Even though he was a one-man band a lot of the times, there was still a lot that went into getting him overseas. And then you add insurance and you add all the, you know, kind of production headaches that happen, but now add 8 hours of time difference. It becomes, a much bigger obstacle. You know, I was impressed, though. We would stay in touch for most of the shoot, and I would say I'd only lose service in West Hollywood driving through trying to talk to him, but pretty much he had full service on WhatsApp the whole time. So we could stay in touch and be talking about what he was experiencing, what he was seeing, and, you know, how we could best kind of capture that that storyline.
Sebastian, did you have, going into this, a notion in your mind about how much access you were going to get? And how did that notion play out? Did it end up that it totally cracked, depending on what you got, or that there was a lot of surprising footage or a lot of surprising people you were able to contact because of your quest?
First of all, access is a huge issue in that part of the world. Just because of all the militias and all the political groups that are controlling those areas and are fighting ISIS. So access is no joke. It's the main game over there. And to be honest with you, whenever I found myself having trouble with access, it actually inspired me to do even more work and try to get that story, try to get that angle, try to get that, you know, that battle or that engagement even more. So it worked great for me. We had the obvious ups and downs, but we always figured out a way to get what we needed. And in the end, I can proudly say that we got what we needed.
Mm-hmm. Staying with you, one of the things, no matter where you stand politically, ideologically, about the situation with ISIS, one thing that it seems that we all, as people, are trying to get a fix, a handle on, is what motivates these people mm-hmm. to be who they are, to the point of saying, we'll behead people, we will cut people up, we will... for our cause. What is the motivation? Because for a lot of people, it comes across as savage. It comes across as, I can't understand how inhumane these people can be. I'm talking about the people who believe in ISIS.
So this is a question for me?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't want to get super political. I do want to say that, you know, their propaganda and their ways of showing what they've been capable of has been extremely successful to scare the West. And, you know, this is probably the first time that a terrorist organization is able to, you know, directly affect people back in the U.S., in Europe, in other parts of the country. those who join ISIS, you know, most of the time the people that join ISIS are usually marginalized people that come from lower income parts of you know, even the U.S., because we also have to understand that a lot of these guys that have joined ISIS actually came from the U.S. They came from France, Germany, Belgium, you know, so there are a lot of layers on how effective these guys have been and what brought them to be who they are. But, you know, what I can say is that for the first time after, you know, Second World War and the Nazis, I think that the world can recognize that ISIS is probably the most brutal organization that we've experienced so far. And, you know, it's, I mean, we can talk about this for hours. There's no quick answer to something like this.
Yeah. On the other hand, and of course, we're coming off Memorial Day weekend where the whole idea is to honor the men and women who made the ultimate sacrifice so we could have the nation and the world that we have and hopefully have it better or greater. What's the mindset of the soldiers who are fighting ISIS, whether from the United States or from other countries?
Well, you have to understand that these guys, you know, most of these guys have fought in these areas that now are under or were under control of ISIS. A lot of these veterans have lost friends, you know, in these areas. And, you know, after years and years of fighting, after bloodshed, after all this money that's been spent in these countries, these guys are back home seeing all this, you know, all this devastation. And they're like, wait a second, we fought for nothing. What was the point of all of this? You know, like my battle brother, my buddy died fighting for this cause. And, you know, indirectly, these things affect you. And most of these guys felt like they had a lot of unfinished business over there and decided to, you know, most of these guys even decided to, like, sell their cars and, you know, get all the money from their savings account and put it onto a flight and fly over there, not knowing what they were going to do and who they were going to be embedding with. And they brought the fight to the enemy, you know, and I have a lot of respect for these guys, you know, and I personally think it's extremely admirable.
Mm-hmm. Christopher, when you have 6 hours or half hour episodes to document this story and your partner in this case, Sebastiano, brings you all this footage, how do you make it at 6 hours? What goes through your process of you and your fellow producers to put this footage together, make it coherent, and, you know, have it be as authentic as what he captured on camera?
Sure. So, you know, at the start of this process, one of the things, as we said, we had almost years of footage. I mean, he had been over there capturing, and so we had to initially start off by creating the timeline and tracking our characters and where they had gone. You know, one of the things that took us a little while was to kind of groom through finding all the right characters for this. You know, when you're looking at a world through characters, it's really important that you find independent views and different arcs and different storylines. So as we did that, we started putting people on kind of their own timelines. A lot of our characters were very closely related, but also on tangent storylines. So we started to kind of lay those out. And as we saw them, they all had kind of their own build, their own swells, their own hardships, et cetera. And we tried to time those within the calendar year as well as their emotional year. And so finding ways structurally to align them thematically was kind of one of our first really big hurdles. And then while doing that, again, trying to stay true to who they are and what they're experiencing and when in the process, because, again, we're working with a really – you know, we're working with something that's happening live on the field, and we were kind of following the story which way it would turn left, right as we were editing. So it kind of was an always evolving cycle.
How are the episodes arranged? Is it arranged chronologically? Is it arranged by individual people? How did you end up arranging the 6 episodes?
Yeah, it's chronologically following all. Basically, it ends up kind of following 3 different locations within the Syria-Iraq area, and we kind of bounce between the 3 as they're experiencing the same journey towards Mosul and Raqqa is kind of how it ended up.
We have a few more minutes with the people behind Hunting ISIS. It's a new series that premieres tonight, 10 p.m. Pacific time on History or History Channel, and then the following Sunday, June 3rd, also at 10 p.m. Pacific time on Viceland. Both networks owned in part by A&E, owned actually by A&E Networks in the case of Viceland A&E joint venture with Vice. We have the executive producer, Christopher Leahy, who joins us here in Los Angeles, and from New York, Sebastian Damasciano Tamara, the director and the camera person. Who saw the action for himself. And if you have a question or comment for both of them, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04. Once again, at the top of the hour, your thoughts with the ABC Roseanne situation. We'll update you on that situation, and we'll give you the opportunity to offer some thoughts on ABC's decision earlier this afternoon to cancel that rebooted series after controversial tweets posted by Barr earlier today. Sebastiano, where do you want to go from here? Do you want to go back to ISIS and do a follow-up? Do you want to go to another hotspot in the world?
Well, hotspots are kind of my bread and butter, so I'm definitely going towards that. I am kind of developing a new series, and it will revolve around Iraq and Syria again, and it kind of has to do with the same subject matter, just seen on a different side, but still involving ISIS and the fact that a lot of these ISIS fighters that were coming from the West are slowly making their way back home. So, you know, we have I don't want to scare anybody, but we have some serious problems that we will be dealing with in the near future.
Christopher, I understand your production company does both scripted and unscripted television. What other projects do you have in the hopper besides this one?
Sure. We're in the middle of production right now on a feature narrative starring Shia LaBeouf, Noah Jupe, and Lucas Hedges. That's a film called Honey Boy, and that is inspired by Shia's personal experiences growing up in Hollywood. So that's in production right now. And then we're in development on a bunch of docuseries. Again, you know, one of our, you know, kind of my interests and Delirio's interests are these, you know, incredibly strong character pieces kind of taking us into a world very similar to Hunting ISIS and finding these, you know, amazing people who have incredibly unique views, and it kind of opens up our eyes to a bigger topic. So we have a couple of those in the hopper that hopefully will be moving forward in the next couple months.
Yeah. The Shia LaBeouf project, is that a film theatrically, or is that a made-for-TV movie? Where is that going to go?
Theatrical film. So that is a film in production currently, and it will, you know, find its home early next year. Did we lose him?
I can't hear anybody now.
There we go. I'm back. We had a quick electrical blip. I didn't get your answer, Christopher. The Shia LaBeouf film, is that a made-for-TV movie? Is that a theatrical film? Where is that going to happen?
Got it. No, that's a theatrical film. It's currently in production in Los Angeles, and then it'll find a home early next year, and hopefully everyone will be able to get a check that out. It's an amazing screenplay written by Shia himself.
And any possibility for any scripted series? Is that you mentioned docuseries for various networks? Any possibility of a scripted series down the road?
Yeah, it's something we're looking into. I mean, again, I think something that the core of what we're looking to do is these real people things. So I think it would be inspired by either some documentary content or something in that vein. I mean, these stories, especially, they're things you can't write, and they're things that are just so authentically true to what we're going through in the human experience. And I think that the scripted style of film that we're looking to do, or TV or otherwise, is in that vein. So yes. Very much so.
Yeah. Sebastian, before we go, the current thought right now is that the situation with ISIS is far, far better than it was even 6 months or a year ago, that ISIS is either on the run or has been curtailed, and it's not totally extinct as a movement. It certainly has gone down. What do you hope people get from this series in terms of that perception? Is that a real perception, or is that something that by seeing the series we're all going to be surprised?
I mean, it's a relative real perception. What I want people to realize is that, yes, sure, you know, the coalition has done a great job at, you know, blocking the efforts of ISIS, and they're currently on a retreat mode and or better, a hiding mode. But we also have to understand that this organization has not been defeated at all. You know, they're slowly finding other countries such as Afghanistan, Libya, some parts of Africa, and, you know, as I said earlier, a lot of these guys are actually making their way back to the West, at least those that were coming from the West, and they're probably going to be hiding around and finding a way or another to, like, you know, attack or create some havoc out there. My intention with this show is pretty much to educate everybody. We have to understand that this has been an extremely important historical event in our lives, and what people have to understand is that, you know, what happened in Mosul and Raqqa with these massive, major military operations to defeat this enemy, this has been probably one of the biggest military operations since World War II. You know, this has been a massive effort, you know, both on the both from the air and both on the ground. So, you know, I would, you know, hope that everybody's going to, like, learn more about this event and read on it and get their facts straight. And hopefully this never happens again.
History premieres this new series, Hunting ISIS, 6-part series tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. If you miss it tonight, you have a second chance to catch it on Viceland. That's Sunday, June 3rd, also at the same hour, 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. Check your local for where both History and Viceland are available in your area on cable and satellite. For more details about both networks online, you can go to history.com. or Viceland.com. That's history.com and Viceland.com. Again, History plays it tonight at 10 p.m. Pacific. Then the following Sunday, Viceland will run it at that regular hour, 10 p.m. Pacific, on Sunday, beginning on June 3rd. Executive producer Christopher Leggett in Los Angeles. Director Sebastiano Tamada in New York. Thank you both for being here. Congratulations on getting this series off the ground. Hopefully we'll get a lot of raves. And all the best to both of you on your future work.
Wonderful.
Thank you so
Thanks much. For having us.
Bye-bye. You're welcome, Chris and Sebastiano. Take care. All the greatest.
Later.
Christopher Leggett joining us live from Los Angeles and Sebastiano Tamada joining us live from New York from Hunting ISIS on History and Viceland here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. And now it's time for our classic trivia question of the week. And unfortunately, after 2 weeks of offering it, we do not have a winner. So unfortunately, nobody is going to get the new National Geographic paperback edition of the classic novel Frankenstein by Mary Shelley. The question was this. On the TV series New Girl, where did New Girl, played by Zoe Deschanel, live before coming to Los Angeles, where the series takes place? The answer was Portland, Oregon. Portland, Oregon is where New Girl lived before moving to Los Angeles. We did that question in honor of New Girl, which wrapped up its seventh-season run on Fox earlier this month. Because of the shortness of the week, we won't offer a classic trivia question this week, but we will offer one next week, and when we do, we'll have two prizes in play, the Nat Geo Frankenstein paperback, and in honor of Shark Week 3's anniversary, a brand-new magnet set from the Discovery Channel. And if you want to be the folks to win it, all you have to do is listen to the question next Monday at our regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific. And if you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and where you're emailing from, your full email address, and so that if you win, we can get the prize out to you ASAP. So once again, we won't have a classic trivia question for you this week because of the shortness of the week, due to the Memorial Day holiday weekend, but we will have one next Monday at a regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific. When you hear the question, if you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. And remember, if you don't get a chance to hear the show next Monday, we will post the question, if we don't have a winner by then, Tuesday morning on Facebook and on my Twitter hashtag at UBC Simon TWBT. That's the UBC Simon TWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to be in, so get involved. That's how we've had three winners over the last 6 weeks, and hopefully we can start a new winning streak with our next trivia question on Monday at a regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific. So get in the game. Makes it all the better when you do. And, of course, all the very best. This is Tomorrow We Televise. We have a program about the truth. We are normally with you at 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific on Mondays and Fridays and sometimes a Wednesday as well. We're coming to you later than normal and longer than usual. Our show is usually an hour because of a couple of things. One, we wanted to give you any news from Ted Sarandos' Netflix appearance at the Paley Center for Media earlier this afternoon. We were there. We gave you a news note on that. But also, we wanted to extend the episode past what we were going to end it at, Eastern, which we're about to come up to in about a minute, 3 p.m. Pacific, so that we can get some thoughts in about ABC's decision to cancel Roseanne. So when we come back, we'd love to hear from you. What did you think about the cancellation of Roseanne earlier today? Let's have a civil discussion about it. I'll offer some early thoughts as well. Just use our chat room or use our phone line. And also coming up, one of the great variety shows of the 1960s is back, thanks to YouTube. And you'll be very happy you learned about it through our Show to Know segment. That's all coming up after we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. This is the very best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com. More than 25 million listeners around the world every month. And we're also available simulcast live on Spreaker.com, which reaches together with Blog Talk Radio more than 30 million listeners around the world each month. It's your home for the Child Whisperer Show with Carol Tuttle. Check out Carol and her guests about the world of parenting. The Child Whisperer Show, weekly, usually on Mondays, right here on Blog Talk Radio and also on Spreaker, too. And don't forget, that's BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. And don't forget, you can catch our show at the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. All you have to do is go to iHeartRadio.com, put the Tomorrow We Televise in the search bar, click, and you're in. You also check us out on Apple TV's iTunes Podcast app and Spreaker's Podcast Radio app. If you don't have Apple TV, go to Apple Store to you or order it online. Welcome back to Tomorrow We Televise, and welcome to those of you just joining us at the top of the hour. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York, and we want to hear from you. What do you think about the decision made by ABC earlier this afternoon to cancel Roseanne permanently? In case you have not heard the situation, let's give you a recap news note about it, and it is that ABC earlier this afternoon pulled Roseanne off its lineup permanently. It was hours after Roseanne Barr, the star of the show, posted Twitter comments apparently overnight about former presidential advisor Valerie Jarrett. We will not repeat the posting we did earlier last hour in full, but we do want to let you know that when the announcement was made to cancel the series, ABC Entertainment President Channing Dungey called the posting by Barr, and I quote, repugnant and inconsistent with our values. And Walt Disney Chief Executive Officer Bob Iger concurred, saying, and I quote, there was only one thing to do here, and that was the right thing. Now, it should be pointed out that before the decision was made by ABC, hours earlier, Barr did take the controversial tweet down and did apologize to Derek via statement, which ran in part, again I quote, I am truly sorry for making a bad joke about her politics and her looks. I should have known better. Forgive me, my joke was in bad taste, unquote. We have already heard from Shonda Rhimes, Ava DuVernay, many of the series co-stars on Roseanne, Bruce Helfer, the showrunner of the series has also weighed in. He also denounced the comments, and he was horrified at the fact that it impacted the show in any which way. ABC has not decided what it will put on in place of Roseanne this fall. It was going to be the 8 p.m. Kickoff of primetime on Tuesday night. And also, we don't know whether what will replace Roseanne will either be a show that they passed over when they announced their fall season schedule earlier this month, 2 weeks ago, or whether they will take a mid-season show and bring it into the early fall season time period in primetime on Tuesday. We'll keep you posted on the situation as we go. Incidentally, you should know that Roseanne Barr has not responded directly to ABC's decision to cancel the show. So we'd like to hear from you. Let's make the civil discussion, no cursing, et cetera. Either call me at 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. That's SimonApple04, and you can find that on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televise. We'll give you about the next 10 minutes or so to see if you can want to call in. We wanted to make sure the line was open so you could do that. Again, 646-652-2906. And remember that phone is good anywhere you're catching us live, right here on Blog Talk Radio or Spreaker, or you're listening to us on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Couple of early thoughts. Number one, this thing broke really fast. When I left home at 10:15 a.m. this morning, in part to go to the Paley Center for Media event with Ted Sarandos, chief content of Netflix, I had not seen this tweet. It was not on my Twitter feed. There was nothing about it on the morning talk shows or on the morning news programs like today, Good Morning America, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Nothing, nothing, nothing. So this thing really broke very fast. Secondly, while ABC specifically referred to this comment, There had been some thought way behind the scenes that ABC was thinking about canceling Roseanne. Why? Because there were some tweets that Roseanne Barr put in the past that were controversial in nature in the recent past. And also, I believe in one of her episodes or a tweet, she had some negative things to say about some of her fellow ABC comedies, Fresh Off the Boat and Black-ish, both involving people of color. So we don't know whether this was a case of the last straw to what Barr was doing, or if this was specifically in response to this comment. But no question that ABC pulled the plug very quick. And again, we don't know yet what ABC is going to do. This was going to be, Roseanne has been one of the big hits so far this year. About 12, 15 million people were watching an episode each week. This is a very big hit that ABC might be taking financially. This was going to be the Tuesday at 8 p.m. leadoff of their primetime schedule this fall. We don't know what's going to be in place of it, either at the moment or this fall. They have a number. The good news is that rather than this happening way before deadline, namely like June, July, August, when Roseanne episodes would have been produced and then probably swallowed up not to be seen, at least on ABC in public, the ABC does have options here. They can take one of their current shows, put it on that Tuesday time period at 8:30 Eastern and Pacific time. They can take a mid-season show, move it up in production to go on earlier in the season, or they can take a show that they bypassed originally when they announced their schedule 2 weeks ago and then bring it back and put it in production. So we'll have to wait and see what ABC will do. So they got a lot of options. That's the good thing. And I have to say, the reaction has been very swift from Barr's cast members and also guest stars. Wanda Sykes, one of the first to respond, the popular comedian who was on the show several times, said, "Forget about it. I am not going to be on this show ever again. This the situation really disgusts me." To people like Shonda Rhimes, Ava DuVernay, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, and it's very unfortunate that this show, which again was one of the big hits so far this year in terms of reboots, now has a dark cloud over it, or somewhat of a dark cloud over it, because of the decision by ABC earlier this afternoon to cancel the show. Once again, we learned about it when at this event at the President for Media, Ted Sarandos, the chief content officer at Netflix, was asked about this directly. There were some gaps in the audience, standing room only crowd at the Paley Center for Media's 10th floor Kissinger Room. We were able to get it confirmed through smartphone news updates. And Sarandos did offer no comment about the situation. So again, we're looking to hear you. So either put your thoughts in the chat room or give us a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. And we'll wait and see if we hear from anybody. And if not, in the next 5 minutes, we'll call the show. But we did want to at least offer you the opportunity to weigh in on the situation, given that it broke very quickly this afternoon. And it's a very, very big call that ABC made this afternoon. And it was, if you didn't hear it before, it was endorsed by Bob Iger, the chief executive officer of parent Walt Disney. Once again, we will be back on Friday. However, we'll either be on 4 or 4:30, depending on who we get for the program. We can tell you that joining us on Friday will be the former co-executive producer and creator of Underground on WGN America, and now the executive producer and showrunner of the brand-new Freeform series, Marvel's Cloak and Dagger, Joe Pekoski. We've had him on the show before with Misha Green, who also created Underground. We'll ask him about this new series, which is getting a lot of play, and we'll also ask him about, does Underground have any chance of coming back in some manner, as it was canceled last year by WGN America, despite critical acclaim. So that's coming up Friday, either at 4 or 4:30 Eastern Time, 1:30 Pacific Time, here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Okay, nothing so far in our chat room yet. We're going to keep it open for another few minutes. And again, we'll hold on another few minutes to see if anybody gives us a call. Number is 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. So while we wait, let's get into our regular feature we call a show to know. It's where we highlight a program that we think is worth your while, and you might not know about it because it's not well marketed, promoted, or publicized, or falls on the radar screen of TV critics and journalists who follow the medium of the two. Every so often, we like to showcase something on YouTube, a classic television series that gets on that you can see through YouTube. And this is one of those cases, again, always love it because YouTube has really become, over the years, a great classic repository of the best television has had to offer through the decades and through the ages. And when it comes to ages, the 1960s was a great decade, a great age for the variety, comedy variety genre of television. Programs like The Andy Williams Show, Robert Martin's Last End, The Hollywood Palace, The Ed Sullivan Show, The Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour, Kraft Music Hall, hosted by Perry Como, The Bell Telephone Hour, so many great comedy and variety shows. The Gary Moore Show, another one which does have episodes available. I wish there were more. During a CBS run, that was a show that Carol Burnett got her claim to fame, which was rewarded, by the way, her career a week plus ago with a special Peabody Award, first ever for career achievement. Well, in 1963 to 1967, one of the very best of these variety shows happened on CBS on Wednesday nights. It was The Danny Kaye Show. And what a wonderful showcase it was for one of the great all-time, all-around entertainers, somebody who could sing, dance, improv on the spot, either with music or with guests in the studio, whether you knew them or not. He was outstanding. What an amazing entertainer. And this show shows him at his best. And until this past holiday weekend, if you wanted to see the Danny Kaye Show on YouTube, all you could see was a clip here, a musical sequence there, no shows in their entirety, with or without commercials. Well, I'm delighted to tell you that over the Memorial Day weekend, we now have episodes, full-length episodes, commercial-free of The Danny Kaye Show for you to see. And if you've never seen this show, it is a revelation. It won an Emmy Award in the first year. It won a Peabody Award. It was black and white the first 2 years, color the second 2 years, all from television scene in Los Angeles. The guest star list is remarkable. People like Gene Kelly, Louis Armstrong, Jack Benny, so many greats of the past, and even a few future stars also showcased there for the first time. And throughout all, Danny Kaye was absolutely remarkable. Fun, handled everything in a seamless way, brilliantly directed by Robert Shear, produced by Perry Roseman, with great musical dance numbers directed by the marvelous and brilliant Tony Schiavone, who then became a terrific comedy sitcom director too. If you've never seen the Danny or heard the Danny Kaye Show, this is a treat for the entire family. And all the episodes are, many of the episodes are now available in album format, pristine look. I guess they were digitally remastered, whether in black and white or color. You don't have the commercials, and it's just a pure pleasure from start to finish. The Danny Kaye Show, from 1963 to 67 on CBS, one of the all-time great variety shows of that decade or any decade whatsoever. And now, thanks to YouTube, you can see, and if you have a smart TV set, a smart TV device, it's a great way to see YouTube and the Danny Kaye Show. And congratulations to whoever made it possible, either from Kaye's Trust or whoever, to make these episodes available in their entirety through YouTube. For more details, go to YouTube.com. Again, the Danny Kaye Show is our show to know. Now, by the way, is there a show that you know currently or past that you think deserves more attention? Well, we want to highlight on this program, as we often do. So let me know what that show is, and if we use your suggestion on the air, you get the credit. So again, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and your mailing address so we can credit you properly. And again, if we use your suggestion on the air, you get the credit. You can also find me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter at UBCSimonTWBT. That's UBCSimonTWBT. Well, it looks like we're not going to get a phone call or a chat room reaction. We wanted to give you the time, and we do appreciate your consideration if you did. So we're going to end things for today. I want to thank again our terrific guests, Joe Berlinger from the Starz miniseries Wrong Man that begins this Sunday night, and from Hunting Isis that begins tonight on History Channel and next Sunday on Viceland, executive producer Christopher Layton and director Sebastiano Tomada. So thanks to them, and thanks to all of you for tuning us in on this later than normal edition, later and also longer than normal. We'll be back on Friday, and again, joining us will be, among others, we hope, the executive producer of the new Freeform series, Marvel's Cloak and Dagger, that begins next week, Joe Pekoski. If you came in late on today's program, you want to catch up on episodes you missed, we make it so easy for you. Just go to our homepage anytime you like and enjoy. It's blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's blogtalkradio.com/televised. You also check out the podcast version. It's available on iTunes.com, Apple TV's iTunes podcast app, Spreaker's podcast radio app, and of course, the IR Radio Podcast Network. What you have to do is put Tawabi Televised in the search bar, click it here in, or go to the category listing on the top of the screen, click it, and click entertainment, and you will find us among all the great programming right there at iHeartRadio.com. Remember, you can catch us on a podcast in any of those ways. We make those episodes available 24/7 for you. And we'd love to hear what you thought about today's program. And we still want to hear what you thought about ABC's decision to cancel Roseanne. If we get any feedback, by the way, in the course of the week, we'll present on Friday's show as well. Okay? So give us a call. And you can also email me. Remember, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. It's SimonApple04@yahoo.com. That's how you get involved in our Clap Street Question of the Week. No Clap Street Question this week. Back with it next Monday with two cards in play. The National Graphic paperback version of Frankenstein by Mary Shelley. And the magnet set for the 30th anniversary of Shark Week, courtesy of Discovery Channel. Remember, you can also find me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter at UBCSimonTWBT. UBCSimonTWBT. Remember, we always love hearing from you, no matter what your thoughts are. We accept them, we appreciate them, and I return all my emails 24/7 within 24 hours. So get involved with the show All About Television. Why? Because what you say matters, and we do appreciate what you have to say no matter what. The views expressed in this program are those of the participants, not necessarily those of the Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and iHeartRadio. Our production associate at Blog Talk Radio is Candace Williams. Andy Toews, Blog Talk Radio's general manager, with Jay Sonnenberg, executive content producer. The co-founders of this enterprise, BTR to be specific, are Alan Levy and Bob Cherish. Tomorrow We Televise is brought today by Audible.com, an Amazon company, and once again, proud development partner of the 2018 New York Television Festival coming to the Big Apple this July. Remember, Audible will transform the way you hear the world because there, listening is the new reading. For that free audiobook, 1 month trial, audibletrial.com/televise. But tomorrow we televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a great rest of your Tuesday and week. We are back on Friday either at 4 or 4:30 p.m. Eastern. That's 1 to 1:30 Pacific Time, you know where, Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Whatever you have to call us the rest of this week, please make it safe and make it great. Until next time, stay well and stay tuned.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.